things like education, offsetting power rates for people who are being cut off. And we're hearing thousands of stories of people having no power now because of things like that. Or and our water, your water is a big issue, right? Oregonians, no matter what party you're in, you have to ask yourselves, what do I get out of this? How does my household benefit, right? How does my community benefit? And then you take it up to the state level. And I hope some really great thinkers in the state level will start seeing that and realizing we have to be bold enough to say, thank you for coming, but you're not contributing to our society here. And it's time that you do that. And so for me, that's where my energy is going to be spent.
That was Dirk Knudsen discussing the impact that data centers are having on Hillsboro, the surrounding area, and Oregon. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next
time. This is KBOO Pointwind.
Friday, March 20th at 6 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. Somehow, the Metal March returns again in 2026, taking over even more of the airwaves. It's 12 whole hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO Metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Tune in to the Metal March Marathon, Friday, March 20th at 6 p.m. through Saturday, March 21st at 6 a.m. only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from interviews with Charles Chambry, presenting the Spring Awakening Fashion Show on March 15th at Nomadic Vintage Rugs, featuring runway fashion, spring-inspired designs, and a night of style and culture in Portland. More information available at shorturl.at/TBF2Z.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland, community radio for the Northwest.
Welcome to Film at 11. Very special edition because all three of us are together, DK Holmes, Fortunato, and myself, Professor Kitty from New York.
We're going to be discussing one single movie, and it's called To Be or Not To Be. I had to pause after the To Be because that's what Jack Benny does in the movie.
Wilhelm Kunze!
Wilhelm Kunze!
Wilhelm Kunze!
Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler! Now, Wilhelm, I understand you want a little tank to play with, huh?
Yes, my father promised me one if I got a good report card.
But our Führer heard about your report card and decided to give you just what you want.
Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler! Heil Hitler! You are going to tell your father who gave it to you, aren't you, Wilhelm?
Sure, our Führer.
And then maybe he will like the Führer a little better, won't he?
Sure.
He doesn't like him now, does he, Wilhelm?
No, he doesn't.
And sometimes he even says funny things about him, doesn't he?
Well, he said they named a brandy after Napoleon, and they made a herring out of Bismarck, and Hitler's going to end up as...
A piece of cheese.
Yes.
Yeah. How did you know?
Well, it's a natural thought.
Oh, a natural thought.
It's a movie by Ernst Lubitsch, released in 1942, near his last movie. It stars Carol Lombard, a reigning queen of the big screen, and Jack Benny, a king of radio. He was a huge radio star. And like Bob Hope, he went from radio to movies and then television. It's set in Poland, probably 38 or 39.
It's the bombing of Warsaw, and the movie came out in the beginning of 42.
Folks, I want everybody to understand this. This is a serious play, a realistic drama.
Good morning, Dervash.
Good morning, Mayor.
How do you like my dress?
Very good, very good. It is a document of Nazi
Is that what you're going to wear in the concentration camp?
Well, don't you think it's pretty?
That's just it.
Well, why not? I think it's a tremendous contrast. Think of me being flogged in the darkness. I scream, suddenly the lights go on, and the audience discovers me on the floor in this gorgeous dress.
That's a terrific laugh.
That's right, Greenberg. You keep out of this. Not a great star, an artist, could be so inartistic. You must be out of your mind.
What do you mean by talking to my wife like that? How dare you?
Well, I'm sorry, I lost my temper.
A husband and wife team who lead an acting troupe. who are trying to survive in this really politically strained situation, and then they get involved in some resistance activity against the German invader.
Well, it's a natural thought.
Oh, a natural thought?
Well, I hope you don't misunderstand. I always, well, that is, you see, Colonel, I hope you don't doubt my... Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler! Heil Hitler! Heil Hitler!
Der Führer!
Heil Hitler! Heil Hitler!
Heil myself.
That's not in the script.
But Mr. Dobosh, please.
That's not in the script, Mr. Brunsky.
But it'll get a laugh.
But I don't want a laugh here. How many times have I told you not to add any line?
You want my opinion, Mr. Dobosh?
No, Mr. Greenberg, I do not want your opinion.
All right, let me give you my reaction. A laugh is nothing to be sneezed at.
Mr. Greenberg, I hired you as an actor, not as a writer, understand? No. What does the script say?
I make an entrance.
And what do you say?
Nothing.
Then say nothing.
But look,
I'm going with rehearsal. I have to play Hamlet tonight.
Here am I sitting waiting for my scene, all eager to go, and I have to wait and wait to be driven out of my mood just because two little actors in the cast want to enlarge their parts.
Mr. Ravitch, what you are, I wouldn't eat.
How dare you call me a ham?
Folks!
So, Kitty, you have a really specific reason for wanting to draw upon this movie for some insights into contemporary American life, or maybe life all over. I don't know.
Well, it's life all over. I mean, fascism in Germany was occurring back there in the 30s, but it was fascism all over the Western world. And Ray Bradbury, I think it was, said comedy is the greatest way to attack a totalitarian regime.
That's true. Nabokov said something similar. Yeah.
And I think both of them certainly did their share, right?
Yeah.
There's a quotation I came across in a book that Rick McCormick, maybe you know him, a fairly well-known film critic, wrote about the films of Ernst Lubitsch. And he writes about To Be or Not to Be, that the entire film works to deconstruct, with humor, the cult of power that Nazism embodies, revealing it to be a movement of insecure bullies, sycophants, and hypocritical functionaries who simulate fanatical loyalty, are insecure in their performances, and are blind in the most banal and bureaucratic way to the evil they facilitate.
Yes, Colonel?
Captain Trost, there's a man in this town. What's his name?
Ravansky.
You mean Boguslav Ravansky?
Yes.
Oh, you don't have to worry about him.
What do you mean?
We shot him 2 days ago.
Ravansky shot? I refuse to believe.
Do you realize whom you shot, Captain Schultz?
I risked my life to get the key man of the underground movement, and just when we're ready, it's sabotage!
I resent that, Professor.
Why did you shoot him?
We have definite proof that this man was telling some outrageous, supposed to be funny stories about the Führer.
That's no reason to shoot the man.
I agree with you.
At least not right away. So you shot Ravansky like that. Wouldn't have been a good idea to look him over first?
Yes, why don't we look over people before we shoot them? I'm sorry, Colonel, but you signed the order of execution yourself. Oh, well, I sign so many every day. You see, I can't rely on my own people anymore.
Please, Colonel, maybe we can still save the situation. There's one other man, a possibility, a good possibility. Maximilian Piotrowski.
Maximilian Piotrowski?
Don't tell me you...
Yes.
Well, Colonel, all I can say is you can't have your cake and shoot it, too. It can't be done. And if they hear about this in England, I'm sure they'll gladly give you the Victoria Cross.
I resent that, Professor.
That's all, Schultz.
Yes, sir.
I didn't like the way Captain Schultz shifted the responsibility back to you.
Neither did I. You know, there's always something wrong with a man who doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't eat meat.
You mean our Führer?
Oh, no, no, please, Professor. I hope you won't.
Why should I ruin you again?
Thank you so much. Well, I suppose now you want to go back as soon as possible to London.
Now, is that really much different from what other anti-fascist movies were doing from the late 30s?
Oh, there was several that did that. The reason why I want to talk about this one now is that I think you could take Nazism out and replace it with Trumpism. It was an anti-fascist film made by German refugees,
right?
German immigrants who had some immediate experience with the regime. But also, I think it was different because the humor was so sharp, and they were so, and they could include so much that was truly insightful about the way that Nazism or fascism works to brutalize. It's raw power that's disguised, and so the acting was a perfectly beautiful metaphor or a way to talk about the performance
right.
of fascism, because it's really just one big performance. It's like almost like a bully.
Yeah. You know,
don't buy the performance, you won't be scared.
And that's a good point. I never heard of that phrase before, but yeah, everybody is performing a role of some kind, except maybe Robert Stack's character.
Mm-hmm.
He's the pretty boy who has fallen in love with the Carol Lombard character. And this is 1942. I didn't know he was that old, but man, he had great big white teeth in those days. He was just had a huge smile. But
No, I think we've talked much too much about me. Tell me about yourself.
Well, there isn't much to tell. I just fly a bomber.
Oh, how perfectly thrilling.
I don't know about its being thrilling, but it's quite a bomber. You might not believe it, but I can drop 3 tons of dynamite in 2 minutes.
Really?
Does that interest you?
It certainly does.
I don't want to overstep myself, but I'll take a chance. Would you permit me to show you my plane?
Maybe.
When shall I call for you?
Tomorrow at 2 o'clock at my home. No, I better meet you right at the airport.
Goodbye. I hope you forgive me if I acted a little clumsy, but this is the first time I ever met an actress.
Lieutenant, this is the first time I've ever met a man who could drop 3 tons of dynamite in 2 minutes. Bye.
Bye.
Well, every great comedy needs a straight man.
That's true. Although I don't know, he's not presented as a buffoon, but more of a foil through which a lot of the things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and also he's unwittingly an aide to someone who is in fact a German agent.
You see, sir, the other night Professor Seletsky was addressing us at the camp, and I mentioned the name of Maria Tura, and he never heard of her.
Neither have I.
Oh, but he's supposed to be a Pole who lived in Warsaw, and she's the most famous actress in Warsaw.
Now, look here, young man. There are lots of people who are not interested in the theater.
Sir, Maria Tura's more than an actress. She's an institution. You couldn't buy a newspaper without reading about her. You couldn't buy a package of cigarettes without finding her picture inside. They named soap after her. You couldn't move around in Warsaw without popping into Maria Tura. Well, I thought it was my duty to tell you before the professor leaves.
He left already, didn't he?
Yes, he was due in Sweden yesterday.
Just a minute. How'd you know he was leaving?
He told us.
Told you what?
That he was going to Warsaw.
That seems incredible.
Well, after all, we were all Poles together, and nobody saw anything wrong in it. Otherwise, the boys wouldn't have given him all the addresses.
What addresses?
Of the relatives in Warsaw.
And he took them?
Yes, sir.
How could he do such a thing? If they fall into the hands of the Gestapo, they can take reprisals against all the families.
When does Professor Seletsky get to Warsaw?
Well, he probably took the boat today for Lithuania. And from Lithuania... And that's uncertain. I should say 3 or 4 days, sir.
How long will it take you to fly to Warsaw?
About 6 or 7 hours, sir.
Do you mind waiting outside a minute?
Yes, a male ingenue, maybe even a Perrault sort of character with the classical theater of comedy, but he naively motivates a lot of the plot.
Yeah.
So the film concerns a troupe of actors who are putting on Hamlet in Warsaw. And while they're putting on Hamlet, they're also in rehearsals for this play about Nazis, which is a sarcastic send-up of Nazis.
Right.
Which they are told right before opening night that they cannot put on because Hitler doesn't want them to. Hitler's about to invade Poland. And so they put on Hamlet. They continue to run Hamlet. While they do so, this Polish flyer, he is watching the play, and he has a crush on Jack Benny's wife, Carol Lombard, Maria Tura. And this sets everything in motion. They start to have an affair. But then when Warsaw is invaded, the pilot has to leave. He has to leave. He goes to join the RAF, as many Polish airmen did. And while he's gone, there's a series of stills that show that Warsaw's been just destroyed. that the happy life of the people who live there has been ruined, that there's been all of these toy bills come up that talk about the concentration camps, people being shot on sight.
Unhappy Poland, attacked without a word of warning by a ruthless conqueror. Warsaw destroyed for the sake of destruction. A curtain had fallen on the Polish drama, a tragedy with no relief in sight. There was a Nazi tank against every Polish hope, and the people were stunned and helpless.
Pretty frank stuff for the time, yeah.
Absolutely demonstrating that the rule of law has been completely usurped and that what law is now is just the ruthless power of the fascist regime.
Yeah, so, sounds familiar.
Yeah, right. So we see that. And so Maria Ture and her husband, as well as all the other actors, you know, they're living in these sort of humble flats and they're continuing to do, I guess, Shakespeare on stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of their wealth and stuff has been taken from them, and they're eating very poorly, as most of the citizens are. And meanwhile, back in England, there is a professor, a famous intellectual from Poland.
Well, gentlemen, it's gratifying to see that you still keep your sense of humor.
Oh, we are even much funnier over Berlin.
I only wish that I were young enough to do for our country what you're doing.
Oh, come on, Professor. One of your radio speeches is worth 10,000 bonds.
Who is going to go back to Poland.
When do we hear you again, Professor Zaleski?
Well, I'm afraid it might be quite some time.
Why? What's the matter?
He's supposedly helping the anti-Nazi cause.
You're going on a secret mission, Professor.
Well, I see it's no use. You boys are too clever for me.
So you are going to Warsaw?
Gentlemen, please, I can't tell you anymore.
Right.
And go back to Poland, and all of the Polish RAF fighters are giving him the names of their relatives so that he can say hello to them. And we know something's wrong.
Right.
Professor Zaleski.
Yes.
My people are fortunately out of Poland, but there is someone in Warsaw.
Oh, a lady?
Yes. It's a very confidential matter. Professor, I'd appreciate it if you'd tell her. But don't tell her husband.
Now I know exactly what to tell her.
Just say, to be or not to be. She knows.
Oh, a code message, eh?
What's the name of the lady?
It's Maria Ture.
Just a moment, and I'll write it down. Now then, what did you say the name was?
Maria Ture.
T-U-R-A. Is that correct?
Well, don't tell me you never heard of Maria Ture.
Why should I?
Well, you lived in Warsaw, you...
Oh, yes, of course, the name is familiar. But she's quite well known.
Well known? She's famous.
Yes, indeed.
Here, Professor, is the name of my brother.
I hope you can read the writing.
Thanks very much.
Now, at this point, you should realize how clever Ernst Lubitsch is as a director. So here we have the title of the film reappearing as a code, like part of the MacGuffin of what the spies are after. But this refers back to, in the first part of the movie, where Maria Ture has this young man who's coming to visit her, and she asks him to come see her while her husband is on stage delivering his famous monologue. Unfortunately, the young man sits in the middle of the auditorium, and so when the actor starts his speech, there's a big commotion as the young man gets up, moves through the crowded aisle, and out of the theater. And like this happens like night after night after night. And so what this does, as the to be or not to be is mentioned again here, it reestablishes that this movie, in spite of all the historic events and the intrigue and everything, is not really a propaganda movie like, say, Casablanca, but is still a romantic screwball comedy about a married couple.
Oh, sweetheart.
Darling. Here, open the trunk and burn all the papers.
All right, but tell me, what did you do with Zaleski?
What did you do with Sabinski?
Oh, that's all so unimportant now. Don't you realize you're going right into the hands of the Gestapo?
Yes. The scene is loaded with dynamite. One little slip and I'm a dead man. Do you know I'm never any good unless I have my peace of mind? Maria, be honest, be frank. I've got to know. Did you tell that fellow to walk out of my soliloquy?
Oh, sweetheart, Darling, I love you. Don't you know that? Don't you feel it? If anything should happen to you...
You think I can do it?
Of course, you're a great actor. Nobody can play it but you. You can and you will do it. Oh, sweetheart.
Goodbye.
Well, there's another theme, which is one actor who just really wants to do the Shylock speech.
Right.
You know, have we not eyes? And I think, like, all jokes come in threes in Lubitsch movies. So there are three moments where it's set up and then it's realized and then it has a coda that, and they're all funny. But I had a little, if I can digress from the general philosophical and international political context of the film, I had a little problem with the motivation just because of the Robert Stack character. I mean, is it, because Lubitsch was the master of suggesting things without getting in trouble with various censorship boards ruling the nation. And so he couldn't really come out and say what seems to be that Carol Lombard and Jack Benny have an open marriage, or that she is she's unfaithful to him on the side, or what? The motivation there wasn't really very clear to me, and so I wasn't sure if I was missing something. I wasn't sure if I was missing something because I'm watching it in the 21st century and not in the middle of the 20th century.
It's not that important, I think, but that she's at least flirting with him. And I think one of the things it does show is that it's a very strong feminist film in that way. I mean, she's a very strong woman, and she plays a very big role in, you know, saving the underground, as
that's
the
true.
Character
exactly.
says again. And we save the underground. And I think she's flattered by his attentions. Mm-hmm. And I think she likes to flirt with him. And whether or not they actually make love, you're right, in the 40s. I mean, now we would assume they do. Who knows? But they're having at least a...
But it is a part of her vanity. And vanity is one of the themes of the movie, of several themes.
For Jack Benny.
Jack Benny's vanity about being able to get through to be or not to be with everybody's full attention. And then her vanity about she can't help it but be flattered by this person who comes to the theater every night to watch her. And,
he's handsome.
With those teeth, who couldn't be? And then, of course, the actor who wants to do his Shylock speech. You know, there's little vanities, but then there's also the vanity of the Gestapo people, you know, and how quickly they are always trying to stay on top of everybody's dismissal of them or attempt to outdo them, if that makes sense. You know, you've just got to watch your P's and Q's around these people, or they're going to report on you. I mean, there's even a child who comes in at one point and is encouraged to. That actually is happening in the play within the play, but it's a theme of an observation of how German society is acting under the rule of Hitler.
Colonel Erhardt, I can't tell you how happy I am to breathe the air of the Gestapo again.
Oh, thank you very much. Cigarette, cigar, glass of brandy?
No, thank you.
There was a certain change in my schedule. Confidentially, big news. A very old friend of yours is coming to Warsaw, the Führer. I know you'll be delighted to see the Führer again.
Who wouldn't?
That's right. How long since you've seen him, Professor?
Too long. Much too long.
Of course. Well, what news you bring from London?
London? Oh, yes, London. Colonel, you're quite famous in London. You know what they call you? Concentration Camp Erhardt.
Oh, they do they? So they call me Concentration Camp Erhardt.
I thought you would react just that way.
Well, Professor, let's have your information.
I think I could stand a glass of brandy after all.
Certainly. Brandy. That makes me think of a very funny story which is going all over Warsaw. A story about our Führer. Now, how does it go? Oh, yes. They named a brandy after Napoleon. They made a herring out of Bismarck. And the Führer is going to end up as a piece of cheese. Don't you think it's funny?
No, neither would the Führer. And I don't believe Adolf Hitler will go down in history as a delicatessen.
Professor, look here. I was only joking, just repeating what I heard. After all, I never... Please don't misunderstand me. You see, I'm loyal. I would have... Heil Hitler!
Heil Hitler!
Professor, do you by any chance intend to tell the Führer about this?
Why should I ruin you?
Oh, yes, of course. It's very nice.
I can safely promise you the Führer will never hear it from my lips.
You're right. Once again, at the very beginning of the film, you see, and that's what they do. They said they the film is continually showing you the operation of this program. And the first thing you see is the way that children are being twisted and corrupted away from their parents and forced to or manipulated to inform on their parents. There's been a couple of exposés about that that have come out in the late 30s. One of them was by Thomas Mann's daughter, who wrote a whole book about Hitler youth and how they were being indoctrinated, which was very popular in the United States. So that was something that they wanted to show right away. And the vanity, I think, is, you're right, I hadn't realized that, but of course it extends to the Nazis as well. But Jack Benny's vanity, which is always played for laughs and funny, he does, his character is not one-sided. He does redeem himself because there is at one point where he says, I will do it. I will kill the Nazi. I will die trying. I love my country. I love Poland. You know, and he still gets a laugh somewhere in there. But yet, at the same time, we realize that, you know, there are values on that side that transcend their vanity, and you don't see that on the other side.
You mentioned Bob Hope earlier, and he made a lot of movies at this time, but I always remember that Hope's character was always a coward. Anything that he accomplished in the thing, he was always pushed to doing. Where Jack Benny in this, he doesn't shirk it. He knows his responsibility. He knows what he's getting into. He knows what can happen to him, and he does it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, as Robert Ray writes in his book, A Certain Tendency in the American Cinema, a lot of the films from the 40s were about Casablanca being the premier example of people awakening to their need to take action against these foreign invaders, so to speak. But then I also think of all the films about theater that, you know, there's the movie with Ronald Colman in which he starts to take Othello too seriously. But then there's also the Preston Sturges's Unfaithfully Yours. It's not set in the theater, it's set in the world of music, but I think that's the one where Rex Harrison is a conductor who thinks that his wife is having an affair. So all these two... These areas are intermingled because you can't just look at a movie solo. You got to look at the other movies around it at the time.
We're just about out of time, but I want to bring up two other films that kind of relate to this one. We're talking about To Be or Not to Be, 1942 movie by Ernst Lubitsch. I also want to mention Jean Renoir's 1938 movie, Rules of the Game, mainly because there's a flyer in both of these movies who comes between a married couple, and it shows the use of farce in many ways in coming out a really good drama. Another film, which actually was being produced in 1942 in occupied Paris, and is a good example of the theater people coming together to fight the occupying force, Marcel Carnet and his crew were hiding out resistance fighters from the Gestapo by enlisting them to work on this movie as extras and set builders and painters and seamstresses and makeup artists. And so they were hiding people from the Nazis while making this movie, Children of Paradise.
And that's interesting because those are both European, and these are European immigrants who understand that they're talking to an American public, and they have two problems with an American public that European public doesn't have. One, American public likes the Nazis. They're inclined to, there's been a lot of propaganda about Germany being, you know, doing things in a way that Americans should approve of.
If you say no, it's no. All right, I call you at the hotel. What was the lady's name?
Mrs. Tura. Her husband is that great, great Polish actor, Joseph Tura. You've probably heard of him.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I saw him on the stage when I was in Warsaw once before the war.
Really?
What he did to Shakespeare, we are doing now to Poland.
Goodbye, Colonel.
You've been listening to myself, Fortunato, from Gremlin Time, as well as Professor Kitty from the Monday Sampler and DK Home, talking about the 1942 Ernst Lubitsch movie with Jack Benny and Carol Lombard, To Be or Not to Be, one of the great movies.
And thank you for listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland. Film at 11 will be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.